Hello, this is Monocle Reads, and today I am speaking to BJ Fogg, Silicon Valley legend and founder of the Behavior Design Lab at Stanford University. Now, for over 20 years, BJ has done innovative research in the behavioral sciences. He began his career looking at the newfound field of persuasive technology. This explored how technologies and computing products can be designed to change what people think and do, and thereby can affect positive changes in various domains. But now, for the first time ever, methods of behavioral change based on BJ's behavioral knowledge appear in print. His new book is called Tiny Habits, the Small Changes That Change Everything, and it teaches us how to transform behavior and achieve lasting self-change in four simple steps. BJ, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm super happy to be here.
And I know that you're not going to allow me to go public with what BJ stands for.
No, I mean, call me BJ. Hello.
Okay. BJ, this book is very exciting because, as I've just said, this has not come out in written form before.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful for members of the public to have access to this knowledge that really you've come by over the last 20 years of very full-on research.
Yeah. You know, and today I've noticed on social media, I forgot which platform, somebody said, this is the textbook for behavior change. And I so appreciate that. Yes, it's very readable and whatnot, but I'm laying out an absolutely new framework of how to change behavior and how to think about it, and it's a system. And so for somebody to recognize that, and, you know, I just happened to notice it this morning, so the title is Tiny Habits, but it's really about my broader work that I call behavior design, which is about how do you understand any type of behavior and how you can design for any type of behavior step by step. And again, it's a system. It's not just a set of principles. In the back, there's a detailed flow charts that map out the system in three pages of flow chart in massive detail, which I like, but bores others.
So, I mean, in terms of change in behavior, I mean, the way we have traditionally thought about it is it's willpower. I want to change my behavior and get fitter, lose weight, stop drinking, whatever it is. And you just have to say, right, I'm going to cold turkey this and just have a lot of willpower. This is not about that.
No. And, you know, that makes me sad that so many people think that's the way it is. And that's the way many products and programs work. And that's what doctors expect you to do and so on. And even today, while I was coming to the studio, just seeing people on the street walking, and it's like, man, these people have been set up. We've all been set up for years and generations of, if you want to change, this is what you must do. And so many of those things set people up to fail. And then people fail, and then they blame themselves, and they feel bad about who they are, and then they feel like they can't change. And Tiny Habits here, as I pulled it together in a book, and I'm so delighted. My hope is to change all that, that people can see they can change, and that their efforts in the past, when they didn't succeed, it wasn't a personal flaw, just they hadn't been given the right way to do it yet. Mm.
In the book, you give us practical exercises and case studies. Now, one of those is actually based on you. Tell us about your own experience with changing your habits.
Oh, my gosh, there's so many things. let's see, I studied human behavior, well, for a long time in various forms, but it was about 2010 when I got insights from my own models, like, here's a way to change habits, and let me try it on my own life. And it came at a time when my life was very, very hard. In my family, my nephew had died recently of an accidental drug overdose, which was devastating the family. I had started a startup that was venture funded, and it had gone downhill, and I had to inform the investors they lost all their money. And then I was doing this huge conference at Stanford, invited, 350 people from around the world were coming, and it was just me and my lab manager doing it. And I was overwhelmed, and I just wasn't feeling up to things. And that's, at the same time, started creating these really, really what became Tiny Habits, the method. And it was at that moment, like I share in the book, where I was like, man, okay, I want to floss my teeth. Let's just pare it down tiny, one tooth. And when I did that and looked in the mirror and said, BJ, good for you. You got this done. Everything today might go awry. All your projects may go south, but you got this one thing right. You flossed one tooth. Good for you. Victory is what I literally said in the mirror. that was a huge moment because I felt this, what I would now call shine, this feeling of success that opened the door for me. And then I kept going. So this technique that we talk about in Tiny Habits, now I understand why it works, but I stumbled across it in the process of hacking my own behavior during this time.
Now, I heard somebody who's very inspired by you, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, speaking the other day, and he was talking about how if you need to insert some kind of behavior in your life, you need to put it into a situation that already exists. So, for instance, while you're boiling the kettle, make sure that that's when you do your little workout or whatever it is. So is it about hooking things onto existing, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, routines that you already have. Yeah, that's one of the hacks in the Tiny Habits method. There's three hacks. And, you know, one is you take whatever behavior you want, you make it as tiny as possible. Not all your teeth, floss one tooth, and so on. That's one hack, tiny. The other hack is rather than using reminders like alarms or post-it notes, you find an existing routine you already do and you anchor, so I call it anchoring, you anchor your new behavior to that. And that insight came to me. You know, a lot of people have insights in the shower, but this came to me as I was getting out of the shower one night, and I already knew, like, make the behavior super tiny, and then I don't have to rely on willpower, but it's like, what's going to prompt me? Because every behavior requires a prompt. And then as I was going through this sequence of things, shower, underwear drawer, take out, it's like this routinized sequence, I thought, oh, that's what it is. You find where it fits in your existing routine, what it comes after. So the word after was just like, oh, there it is, what it comes after. And if you find what the new habit naturally comes after, then you have something to remind you, and then it just wedges seamlessly. And if you find the right spot, it just seamlessly fits into your existing routine. It doesn't even feel like you're creating a new habit. It just is what you do.
I mean, this is something you've been researching, as we said, for a very long time. And I'm interested in knowing exactly what the Behavior Design Lab is.
Yeah, so it's a lab at Stanford University that has anywhere from 5 to 10 student researchers that work with me at any one time. And in about 2010, in fact, it was 2010 again, we started working on projects that had nothing to do with technology. Previously, my lab was called the Persuasive Technology Lab, but our interests changed. And in 2010, it became very clear we weren't going to go back and look at technology. We're just interested in human behavior and habits. And so we changed the name of the lab in early 2011 to the Behavior Design Lab. Behavior design, as we define it, is a set of models around human behavior, some of which you can find in Tiny Habits, and a set of methods, most of which you can find in Tiny Habits. And it's this new, the models are ways of thinking about behavior. And they're new. It's not a summary of past stuff. They're fresh models. And then the methods also are new and fresh. And together, that's what we call behavior design. And Tiny Habits, the book, really is the volume that brings together behavior design in a way that I've never shared before, with a focus on the Tiny Habits method. So that's the highlight of the book. It's the fastest, easiest way to create habits. But as people, and this is why I'm so happy when somebody annotated their social media post, is this is the textbook for behavior change. And it's, it's not just Tiny Habits. It's any kind of behavior change. Now here are the models and here are the methods that people can use to understand behavior and design for behavior.
I mean, I think there's an argument to say that we need a global behavior change when you look at the toxicity, in particularly in politics at the moment, the divisiveness here in Britain, what's going on in the United States. I mean, we need this at an institutional level.
Yeah. Can I give an amateur opinion on that? I mean, everything I share in the book and everything, I'm a behavior scientist. I'm very careful about my statements. So I'm going to qualify this as amateur. But my sense is people, well, I know this from my research, that people are feeling discouraged, defeated, a lot of self-trash talk, and so on. And I think because of that and because of the fear, they're reacting to things now in a way they wouldn't in previous generations. So I do think, this is my opinion, I haven't done research on this piece, but it does seem like when people are in this state of, you know, scarcity and fear and they're feeling bad about themselves and so on, they are reacting, whether it's outrage or whether it's being polarized in ways that wouldn't have happened earlier. Mm. And so when I look at that and, you know, when I go in the plane and I sit in a window seat, I look out there and I look at all the homes and all the cities, and it's like so many people down there that are struggling and trying so hard. And man, BJ, you have a responsibility to bring this to them. This was given to you to share with people, and you have a responsibility. And yes, you're a super private person, but you're gonna go on Instagram if you have to. You're gonna go talk to people. You're gonna do what it takes to share this, because I do think there's a relationship between what's going on in the politics and this, where we are as individuals in the U.S. and the U.K. and so on.
One of the points, one of the chapters, I suppose, that you bring up in this book is emotions create habits. And I think that's really interesting. What do you mean by that?
It's a radical shift in talking about how habits work, but it's the right perspective. For too long, the idea that repetition creates habits has been out there, and people believe that, and the headlines say that, like, oh, 21 days will create a habit, and now more recently, 66 days, and you will have this habit. And that's not true. That's not accurate. When you look at the research, if they cite research, if you look at the research they mostly cite, it shows a correlation between repetition and habit strength. It does not show that it causes the habit to form. So people are confusing correlation with causation. Mm-hmm. What causes the habit to form is the emotion that you feel as you do a new behavior. So if you do a new behavior like play the flute in the morning and your brain goes, oh my gosh, that made me feel really good, or made me feel really successful. If your brain associates a positive emotion with that behavior, it will start wiring in as a habit. The problem, let's go back to repetition, problem with that. If people believe that repetition is the key to creating habits, then it's like, okay, if I want the habit of going to the gym an hour a day, if I just suffer and endure for 21 days, then boom, I'll have the habit. So the framing is one of suffering and enduring, and then I can have a habit. So habit, behavior change is seen as something that you have to suffer through, which is not the case. My research shows it's the opposite. You change best by feeling good rather than feeling bad. And the related problem, if people think, oh, I'm going to have to suffer in order to change how I eat or how I sleep or how I prioritize or whatever, they're more likely to procrastinate or avoid it entirely. Because who wants to dive into suffering, especially when you're discouraged and strapped for time and strapped financially? So these problems compound. So what I'm hoping to do with Tiny Habits, and especially that chapter, is to help people understand that it's emotions that create habits, and you can hack. This is the third hack of Tiny Habits, in addition to make it tiny and find an anchor where it fits, is you hack your brain by firing off a positive emotion through a technique that I call celebration. And there's at least 100 ways to celebrate. One way is to, if you can see me on audio, double fist pump and go, yes, awesome, like Tiger Woods, or look at what Serena Williams does or whatnot. Or, you know, when your favorite football player scores a goal, what does he or she do? They're celebrating. Well, you take whatever is a natural celebration and you use that to hack your brain. So as you play the flute, if you want to create flute playing as a habit, if you can cause yourself to feel the positive emotion, you're wiring that into your brain, and you do it deliberately. You don't leave it to chance. So it's a hack.
You mentioned playing the flute a couple of times now, and you have actually got a flute in front of you.
Before we started recording, you kind of teased me a little bit about getting it out. So yes, I have a flute, and it is audio. Yeah, I love, I'm not that serious of a musician, but I do like having the morning habit. My meditation habit, and meditation is fine, but it's a very hard habit because you don't feel successful, right? So one of the reasons meditation is a very difficult habit to wire in, because as you're sitting there, most people, you're feeling the opposite of success. And that means you want to avoid it. If your brain associates a behavior with you feeling frustrated or stupid or uncoordinated, then it doesn't wire in. So yes, you can create meditation as a habit, and I decided to shift my meditation habit to playing the flute because it was meditative for me, and there's ways I can just play long tones for a minute or longer, and it's breathing, and it's focus, and it's vibration. And this goes to, I'll make one more point, and I'll try to be quiet.
It's an interview. I'm interviewing you. The whole kind of, the thing about this is you're not meant to be quiet, okay?
All right. Well, the thing maybe why I'm sharing this example is, yes, get a habit around music, because it's really important, and nature, that's really important. But as your life shifts and your needs shift, change your habits. Change your habits up. And that's a good and healthy thing to do. So if a habit is no longer serving you, bam, change it. If meditation wasn't the thing that was delighting me, great, let's do flute. Mm. And if it's not flute, let's do something else.
I mean, you talk about untangling bad habits, mm-hmm. and I mean, that's a whole other area. How do you do that? So, for instance, I've recently given up smoking.
Good for you.
But it's hard.
It's hard, yeah. You know, a lot of those habits we have that we call bad habits are a function not of somebody's lack of character or willpower, but of the environment around us, the context we live in. And that includes the media, and that includes the people. And so for so many behaviors, especially how we eat, how we consume social media, and within the household, how we sleep and so on, it's our environment that if we could just magically change our environment, we could quickly change our behavior. So if you need a quick behavior change, the only way to do that at a big scale is to change your environment, which is, I'm a huge fan of that. The other option you have is to change in these tiny ways. And that is accessible to anybody, even if you can't completely move to a different country and a different, you know, live in the jungle and have new friends. You can still change in these tiny ways. When it comes to getting rid of unwanted habits, I'm hoping to change the language and the thinking. Typically, we say break a bad habit, which if you think about that, implies that if you put a lot of force into breaking it in one moment, it will crack and you'll be done. And that's not how these kinds of habits work. So I'm putting out there that we should talk about it as untangling these habits, because it's really like with smoking, it's not just one smoking. There's various times during the day that you smoked, and you could think of it as like a tangle and a big knot. And then it sets up the right expectation that's a process. Now, there's different ways to quit smoking. Let's take snacking, for example, because I'm more familiar with it. I mean, I don't do clinical work, even though I've coached 40,000 people personally in creating habits. So since starting in 2011, I didn't realize all these people would sign up. You know, I had this free 5-day program I was going to offer to a few people, and all these people signed up, and it kept going. So I know a lot about how habits form. You know, after, you know, hundreds of people week after week, year after year, and thousands of people, very, very clear patterns emerge. But what I don't do is I don't play the role of like a clinical psychologist or somebody that will sit you down and say, let's talk about your smoking behavior. Mm. But in a general approach for untangling bad habits, you look at, well, it's a tangle. It might be overwhelming right now, but just like a tangle with my phone cord or an extension cord, I know if I get started, I can get there.
Yeah.
And you start with the easiest item first to untangle, then you go to the next one. And then at a certain point, like in the book, there's a woman named Junie, that's her real name. Some of the names we changed, all the stories are true. But in Junie's case, she had a sugar addiction, and she figured out how to untangle it. And she got to a certain point where the rest of the tangles fell away on their own. So let's say she had 10 different times during the day when she was eating on sugar, and she started unwinding the easiest ones, and then boom, at a certain point, it just came free for her, and she was sugar-free, which she never imagined could happen. Mm. You know, it was a huge victory.
Absolutely.
In her life.
Yeah. BJ, I think that this is a life-changing book. It's easy, it's fun, and I think it's a way that we can all get on board with really making meaningful changes to our life. And I think one of the first things I'm going to do is learn to play the flute. So
this is actually a recorder, which is like about the simplest instrument. However, most of us were tortured as kids playing this. If you want a really easy instrument, pick it up again, maybe the alto or the tenor, if you have bigger hands like me.
BJ, thank you so much. I'm going to ask you to play out while I tell people a little bit about the book. It's called Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything. It's by BJ Fogg, the founder of the Behaviour Design Lab at Stanford. It's published by Virgin Books. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. Thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Louis Allen. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening, and for listening to BJ and his recorder.